Actions speak louder than words. James knew that just as well as we know that. Words, you see, can be devilish things. They can sound good, and they might well be good, but words can sound good but come loaded with all kinds of spite and innuendo. Words on their own doesn't seem to impress James all that much. In chapter 2, verse 14, James lets us know that he's not all that impressed with the person who just claims to have faith but no works. In chapter 3, verse 1, James is not all that impressed with the person just presuming to be a teacher. And now in chapter 3, verse 13, James takes to task the person who promotes their own wisdom, the person who brags about being wise, but really they're only operating out of bitter envy and selfish ambition. Today, and for a number of years now, the government have had their own press department. And spin doctors help promote the proper image. That is, to promote the image that the government wants people to see. And the palace are now doing the same thing. Spin doctors may be able to produce the results, but they're held in a kind of contempt by most people, because it seems to fair-minded people that spin doctors are adding heavy cosmetics to reality to try to make things look a little bit better than they really are, or different from what they really are. Most of us can't afford to hire spin doctors, so we're just left to do the job ourselves, for ourselves. How does self-promotional propaganda go? Well, not only will you get to hear what was said, but how it was said, delivered up in such a style to maximize the impression so that the listener will just be bowled over by the wisdom. That kind of posturing does not impress James. He presents a challenge to the wise here in verse 13. He asks the question, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in humility that comes from wisdom." Basically, James is saying that the wisdom is not a matter of talking things up, but rather it is a matter of living things out. We can easily have a wrong view of wisdom. We are inclined to think of wisdom in terms of thoughts or words. We think that clever advice or clever remarks are signs of wisdom, but James says no to that. It's not words. It has got to do with the way that we live. The temptation is to try to show ourselves wise by what we say. Forget the talk. Forget the spin doctoring, says James. Let us see it lived out in your life. Now, I'm trying to imagine the scene of what it might be like if James was actually preaching this to us today. Would he pause after asking this question in verse 13? Who is wise and understanding among you? Can you imagine some pompous person standing up to acclaim themselves? Yes, I'm wise like that. Hardly likely, because most of us are too worldly wise to fall for that one. You see, the proper answer to the question that James asks here must be negative, because the person who has real wisdom, true wisdom, will also have humility as well. So if you see an ostentatious display of what you think is wisdom, it's not wisdom at all, because what should be up front is humility. Not wisdom. If the sign outside says wisdom, then it's likely that we're selling envy and selfish ambition from the inside. But if the sign on the outside says humility, then you can go on and inquire for the wisdom that lies within. Who is wise? James asks. Who has moral insight and skill in deciding practical issues of conduct? Who has a wisdom derived from a personal knowledge of God? Who has understanding? Who has this fuller knowledge to practical situations? Let them not talk it, but let them walk it in living the good life. The good life is that daily conduct that exudes the attractiveness that comes from Christ-centered living. By good works, the Christian can demonstrate his faith, and by that good life, the Christian can demonstrate his wisdom. Through living it out, through deeds done in humility, then wisdom will be demonstrated and displayed rather than talked and promoted. Knowledge without wisdom does not exhibit humility. It displays a feeding frenzy of curiosity and sometimes a cruel condemnation of other people. But true wisdom ends in good behavior. True wisdom is evident in the humble spirit. The unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit is of great worth in God's sight. Humility and wisdom belong together just as pride and folly belong together. But wisdom comes in a number of guises. There is false wisdom and there is true wisdom. And James deals first of all here with false wisdom. Verse 14, the deception of false wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. The NIV says, do not boast about it. Boast about what? What does the "it" in that verse refer to? Let me read it from another translation, which I think makes the meaning a little clearer for us. But if you are bitterly jealous and there is selfish ambition in your heart, don't brag about being wise. That is the worst kind of lie. The deception that James is attacking is when the bite of cruel criticism in our words is presented as being delivered in the cause of zeal and justice, but really it's only inspired by the reservoir of bitter envy and selfish ambition that we have harbored up within our hearts. When we're saying critical things, when we're passing those critical things off as being spiritually inspired, we're presenting it as heavenly wisdom. James says, stop the deception. This is a lie. We can see that by the lack of humility, that the wisdom is in fact spawned in the bitter envy and selfish ambition of your own heart. We can be so devastating with our tongues, condemning others, and the claim to wisdom comes by our posturing, that we're doing this so that we can be biblical, taking a stand for the truth, taking a stand for moderate ways. This stand that I'm taking, this message that I'm communicating, it's promoted as the very wisdom of heaven itself. It's not, says James, a lie, the worst kind of lie, because the wisdom that is from above is characterized by humility. And that statement you just made is characterized by anything and everything but humility. Don't pretend to contend for God's kingdom, because the spirit of your contention does not bear the marks of one who is subject to the king. The marks of the kingdom are marks of humility. The truly wise person is quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry, speaking and acting as those who know that they're going to be judged. But come on, says someone, we need to be practical. There will be times when we need to speak out, to rebuke, to condemn, to correct. There are times when you need, when you need to speak out, and it in fact would be foolish to be silent. Now, of course, I agree that there are those times when we must speak out. But here's a test for each of us. When we speak out to condemn, to rebuke, or to correct, on whose behalf are we speaking? Would it be wise to speak on your own behalf, to use your own wisdom? No, I don't think it would be right to speak on my own behalf, you say. Would it then be on God's behalf? Yes, that's it. I would speak out to rebuke, to condemn, to correct on behalf of God. It would be the wisdom that came from above. Let me ask then, the last time you spoke out, were you speaking for God? Did you go to God in prayer over the matter? Did you ask for heavenly wisdom? When you were putting others right, when you were talking about someone, did the wisdom to judge come from heaven while you were on your knees, or was it self-appointed? We can so easily fool ourselves into thinking that our zeal is a zeal for God. But such are the subtleties of our own sinful hearts. Our zeal can become perverted into no more than a bitter antagonism against those who do not express their adherence to God and His truth in the same way that we do. If our words of wisdom were from heaven, they would have been characterized by humility. That's how we know. That's how we judge what we do. We fool ourselves that we speak for God, but we've never spoken to God about these things to know what He would want us to say, or whether indeed He would want us to say anything. The person who has hard knees is more likely to have a soft tongue. The hard knees coming from the time spent in prayer and a tongue that is controlled by the Spirit of God. The outworking of bitter envy and selfish ambition is a false wisdom, a bogus wisdom, and the pretense to wisdom and folly in itself. James says something now about the character of false wisdom. Verse 15, such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. It doesn't come from heaven. It's earthly, it's unspiritual, it's demonic. James here is leaving us in no doubt. He's leaving us no hiding place. Such kind of behavior is not from heaven. If you are in any doubt about your past performances, take it back to heaven and ask God about it. Take time on your knees before God in prayer, examining your own heart. As you listen to this, don't be thinking about what someone else said to you or about you. Think about your own heart and leave the Spirit of God to deal with the other person. Do you see the sinful progression that's involved here? It's earthly, it's unspiritual, it's of the devil, devilish. These three adjectives form a climax, indicating to us a mounting sense of distance and alienation from God. When the wisdom is not from heaven, it is earthly, it's earthbound. Paul says in Philippians 3 that the enemies of the cross have their minds set on earthly things. This wisdom is unspiritual. It is soulish in the sense that it is the feelings of man that is considered supreme, and this wisdom really is devilish. Never forget that a Christian can lend their hands or their tongue to do the devil's work. This kind of talk, this kind of behavior, it's not positive, it's not constructive. And what's the outcome of this false wisdom? Well, James tells us in verse 16, "For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice." Some people leave paths of unrest and chaos and division behind them. And in a church, it is so easy to create unrest, to be critical about everything. What are you building up when you behave like that? How much are you in prayer about that which you are not happy about? The problem is that not only do you sow disorder in your own life, but you create unrest and disorder in other people's lives as well, with a spiteful comment, a few points scored, and attributed to your account. But what a great forest is set on fire by the spark of a spiteful word. James has in mind a public disorder, and this can be the outcome within a church when seeds of dissension are sown. It is serious when this happens in any community, but this community that James has in mind is the local expression of the body of Christ. This is devilish behavior because the devil delights to find footholds to gain ground in his spoiling tactics to disrupt the work of the Spirit of God. Pride and envy are the mother and midwife of church disorder. But how different is the wisdom that comes from heaven? This wisdom is of divine origin. James now points us to this through wisdom, and he considers its character in verse 17. "But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere." James does not describe what this heavenly wisdom is, but he describes what it does. If you're able to follow a Greek text, this verse is worth looking at because of some very interesting literary patterns. But coming to our English text, this heavenly wisdom is pure. It's free from moral and spiritual defects that will cause sin and disorder. It's free from bitter envy and selfish ambition. This term is the term that is applied to Christ in 1 John 3 and verse 3. "All who have this hope in them, in him, purifies themselves just as he is pure." The absence of such blemishes and the presence of such purity produce a church that is loving, that is tolerant, that is healthy, and above all, centered in God's holiness and an answer to the prayer that Christ prayed, that there might be unity. Such wisdom is also peace-loving. When there is that inner purity within our hearts, the outworking will be behavior and talk that is peace-loving. "I'll stop my tongue. I'll watch what I say. My talk and behavior will promote peace and harmony rather than dissension and division." The heavenly wisdom is ready for peace. It will desire and promote and encourage peace, and it will restrain all acts of discord. The wisdom from heaven is considerate. The term translated considerate in the NIV is pretty difficult to translate into English. It conveys the thought of respect for the feelings of others, not wanting to insist on every detail of our own rights. One commentator calls this gentle reasonableness. This wisdom is submissive. It's willing to learn from others. In a case where somebody is doing something that seems different to our way of thinking, there is a willingness to take the time to find out why that might be. The acceptance that there might be good reasons behind a way of doing things that is different from the way that you have done it for the last 40 years. When we are faced with having to work a method that is different to our own, we should show willingness to cooperate. Such heavenly wisdom is full of mercy and good fruit. Mercy doesn't hand out what is deserved. It hands out what is needed. Are we in the business of showing mercy? We see how relentless the media are when they go for a public figure. Do we exhibit that kind of vendetta against our fellow believers? Note every mistake at an instant recall, able to list every fault and flaw, every character defect in however long we've known them. Does that not show a lack of mercy in us? The heavenly wisdom is full of mercy and good fruit. This list is in many ways is a summary of what James has been talking about already. James has already spoken of the need to show mercy, and he has also spoken about the need to be impartial. Here he says the heavenly wisdom is impartial. We will give value to the wisdom that is from heaven. We will assess things on that basis and not show favoritism on the basis of external circumstances, as we saw in chapter 2. The wisdom from God is sincere. This wisdom does not need to work under a mask. There are no hidden agendas with this wisdom. The conversation is always straightforward. We are honest and sincere. The insincere person is a hypocrite, the greatest fool. And when we behave this way, we cheat ourselves most of all. Finally, James asks us to reflect on what kind of harvest will the seeds that we are sowing produce. The fruit of true wisdom, verse 18. Peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness. The harvest of righteousness is a result of the life lived according to the heavenly wisdom. One who follows heaven's ways will be a true disciple of the Lord Jesus Christ. The peace of God that we know in our own hearts will seek to promote peace. But if there is unrest within our hearts, that's what we will sow around us. James is doing no more than stating the obvious. We will do what we are. The question we each face is, what are we doing? And implied is the question, what are we? If we enjoy peace and harmony with God, then we ought to promote peace and harmony with one another. The crop that we sow may take a long time in coming, but the harvest will be according to the seed that we sow. Sowing seeds out of bitter envy, sowing seeds because of peace. What seeds are you sowing today, and what will that harvest be? We should be careful about what we say and what we do. We should be careful about what story we pass on. We should be careful about how we influence other people. The only way we may act wisely is to be in contact with the Lord Jesus Christ, who himself is the very wisdom of God, and ask that we might learn from him. It is the neglect of God in our lives that gives rise to the seeds of bitter envy and selfish ambition. Let us constantly turn to Christ that we might raise a harvest of righteousness.